This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Chapter, which is the longest chapter in the sutra. Very influential. Like, there's old temples in, I think, in China and maybe in Japan as well, where basically you can go in and there's 53 little shrines, each one representing one of the teachers that the pilgrim Sudana visits in this sutra. So you can embody his pilgrimage. And just to kind of put it in simple terms, yeah, it's this feeling like, oh, I really want to wake up and help people wake up and be free. And he meets Manjushri and he's like, great, you should go find some teachers. And he goes and finds a teacher, and the teacher, he says, how do I do it? How do I be a bodhisattva? And the first teacher says, well, this is how I do it. And then it says, but how could I possibly know this path? You should go talk to this other person. And then that happens 53 times. The person says, well, this is how I'm doing it. And then at the end says, but how could I possibly know? You should go talk to this other person. And Sudana just keeps meeting people. Almost like the Dharma is about meeting people who are different. And as I said at the beginning, the teachers are extremely various. There are people who are rich, who are poor, who are powerful, sort of like aristocrats, who are complete outcasts, who are men, who are women, who are young, old, and in between, priests, who are lay people, people with all different occupations. I only remember some of them, but as I said, there's a mariner, a mathematician, a grammarian, someone who's, you know, correcting, making sure it's H-E-Y apostrophe R-E in the right place. Enormously famous bodhisattvas, Avalokiteshvara has a big section, Maya. The Buddhist mother has a big section. Samantabhadra is featured throughout the text, by the way. So we mentioned Samantabhadra in the meal chants. Samantabhadra is particularly associated with this text. Samantabhadra is in action in the world, riding on a big old elephant, trying to help people. So anyway, that's just a little bit of a glimpse. But I want to talk about like a particular element of the which is kind of the way people have these very distinct practices of teaching. Some of them teach by giving people food or by touching them or by listening to them or by talking to them or by meditating by themselves. But we see a distinct tendency in a bunch of the things for a type of person to be surrounded by similar people. It's like an affinity group. So, you know, I don't know if you know about affinity groups, but like at our Zen Center, we have an LGBTQ plus group, which I lead because I get to lead that because I'm bisexual. And we have like Waking Up to Race, which is for white people, kind of investigating our own whiteness and how that relates to the pervasive racism in our country. And we have a People of Color Dharma group, and we have just forming now the Tara group, which is for women and transgender folks. And we have recovery meeting for people in addiction recovery. Yeah. And I think like, maybe at some point, or maybe still some people are like, well, why do you have to have an affinity group? Couldn't we just all be together? But actually, there have been affinity groups since we have the earliest records of Buddhism as affinity groups. For one thing, Mahapajapati formed an affinity group, which is a bunch of women, and said, we want to be ordained and we're not taking no for an answer. And then formed a Sangha. And one of her students, well, actually a student of the Buddha, but one of the early nuns, Padachara, is a person who was profoundly traumatized And it was that recovering from the trauma and the Buddha being willing to meet her in her really madness that allowed her to wake up and enter the path. And then what you see is many different poems by people who also had profound traumas who wanted to be with her. So from the earliest layer of teaching, we see this tendency of people to, there be some tendencies of people to be attracted to teachers who are like them in various ways. Maybe I'll just read a couple things here. I'm going to have really awesome, whatever this muscle is by the end of this. Oh, yeah. So I'm going to talk about Maitrayani tomorrow in the morning. But yeah, this is a girl. Sudana, here's there's this girl who teaches the Dharma, and he travels a long way. There's a lot of setup. And then he gets to this town. Simhavirumbita. And the people there say the girl Maitrayani, daughter of the Raja Simhaketu, with a retinue of 500 girls, is up on the roof of a palace of radiant jewels, sitting on a seat on sandalwood legs, and draped with nets of strings of jewels and arrayed with celestial cloth, expounding spiritual teaching. I'm just pointing out she's surrounded by a bunch of other girls. Later on, he meets Prabhuta, and Prabhuta gives a lot of teaching because everything is a lot in this text. And then, towards, I don't know, in the middle of her section, she says to Sudana, "Do you see these 10,000 women, my companions? Beginning with these, there are countless tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of women whose practice is the same as mine, who are one in vows, one in roots of goodness, one in ways of emancipation, one in purity of devotion, equal in purity of mindfulness, one in purity of deportment, equal in infinity of understanding, equal in attainment of spiritual faculties, equal in pervasive awareness." So apparently there's a lot of really awesome women hanging out with Prabhuta. Hundreds and tens of thousands of them. So we see many different kind of types of people. So I just read a couple sections. And this is probably really obvious, but it matters who's represented in the stories we tell. I think that's obvious, but I'll just say it out loud. So I like this sutra because there are more kinds of people represented. So it's also true that oftentimes there are teachers who are surrounded by all different kinds of people. And if you look at the stories of the, like, if you just look at the Buddha in the Pali Canon, all different kinds of people come and go to him for support. Craftspeople, kings, certainly women and men, people of all different ages, people who are dying, people who are really healthy, people who are desperately want to enter the path, and people who just want to argue with him. We're like, I'm going to go out with the Buddha. Well, given that they're Buddhist texts, what do you think the likelihood the story is going to tell that they did that? So anyway, all different kinds of people, extremely various. And we see that in here as well. There's a mariner who helps people by sailing. That's a good way to do a bodhisattva activity. Shariputra goes to find the mariner Vaira, and he has a lot of really wonderful thoughts in mind. Surprise. With these thoughts in mind, with a purpose rarely encountered, Sudana made his way to Kuttagara city looking for the mariner Vaira. When he got there, he saw the mariner surrounded by hundreds of thousands of merchants and hundreds of thousands of other people who wished to hear him talk, explaining to them the oceans of virtues of Buddhas, by talking about the ocean.
Yeah.
So you could be like, I'm talking about the ocean, but that's a way to help people see the path of liberation. I'm talking about math. That can be a way of people seeing how we can be free together. I'm talking about, I don't know, how to teach children. And can do that as a way to see how we can be free together. Asha. I couldn't find the page number. There's someone whose practice is feeding people who are hungry, and it turns out a lot of people want to go see him. So Asha is a healer. And I can't find the passage. But anyway, surrounded by people come throughout the time that they're together asking for help for their illnesses. So this is about healing. This is about healing. There's a prince. Maybe I can read a little bit of this. A prince whose dad is the king and has a lot of people in prison. And there's a really long, a lot of times in sutras, there's a long prose section and then it will be repeated, but in verse. That's very, very common in Buddhist texts. So I'm just going to read you a little bit from the verse section here. Thousands of offenders had been condemned to death by the king. Seeing them, the prince was seized with compassion and asked the king to release them. Hearing this, the king called his ministers and told them all about it. They all said, bowing to the king, "He is out to destroy you." Incited by the ministers, the king hastened to kill the prince. Undismayed, indifferent to his own death, the prince did not abandon the convicts. And his mother intervenes and says, "Give him 2 weeks. Give him 2 weeks to do whatever he thinks would help." And the king says, "Okay." And so the prince says, "Give everyone what they need." This is actually a quotation from the Pali Canon, where a king says, "How I have all these thieves in my kingdom, what should I do?" And someone says, "Give people food, give them medicine, give them safe places to live." And then that sutra ends by saying, "And the children will play in open doorways." So in this sutra, it's a little more magical. So the king gives the people stuff and they are like, "Oh, they are less harmful." And the Buddha thinks this is awesome, shows up, and everyone becomes a late stage bodhisattva through his miraculous power. So that will undoubtedly happen if we transform our incredibly inequitable carceral system in the United States. Anyway, I probably shouldn't get into but giving people what they need. So I think it will be nice to do some reading from the text. So I'll talk about this a little bit as I get ready. So we're not going to start just getting my thoughts organized. So the Gandavyuha has he meets 53 teachers. They all have different methods. He just keeps going. And towards the end, Manjushri invites him into this tower. And we're going to read the tower section, which is one of the most famous passages in the Avatamsaka Sutra. And it's preceded, I think the way I set this up is we're going to get the very end of the this bodhicitta section. So bodhicitta means awakened heart or awakened mind. And it's basically, it means many things, but here are just the aspiration to wake up so everyone can be free, so that everyone can wake up. By wake up, we mean not suffer. That's like they're identical terms. So there's like, I don't know, 20 pages of metaphors for how awesome bodhicitta is. If you remember, like yesterday when we were sitting in here, it was like talking about bringing essentially bodhicitta to like simple activities. Can I try? Did that make a difference? I'm happy to have done it. So there's all this bodhicitta, just how expansive and beautiful it is, unlimited. And then he goes into the tower. And I think for the reading today, what I want to do is a more simple style where it's just we have different people read from the text and the rest of us listen. So nothing too exciting. But sticking with this idea of just keeping going, let it flow over you. When you let something flow over, you don't have to like ignore it. So we can, you know what I mean? So it's like not grabbing at it, but being there with it. This is like what I think we're trying to do here. So that's how we can be with this words. So can someone hand me your little thingies and I can see what's what? Oh yeah, this is. Okay, so I'm remembering how I set this up. So he goes in, and Manjushri's like makes this big tower. It's very impressive, and Sudarna is like, "I want to go in there." You know, it's kind of imposing. It's a little scary. A little scary. He says, I want to go in there. And he goes in, and when he gets in, he sees that there are towers everywhere. And he's in all the towers. And all the towers are inside all the other towers. It's very psychedelic. Does anyone here know Yayoi Kusama, the Japanese artist? So she makes infinity rooms, which are like you go into the room. And there's just mirrors everywhere. And then, so when you walk in the space, then there's some sculptural objects and lights. And so it's just like infinite regress of you and whoever you're in there with and sculptural objects and lights. And my favorite one I ever went into was you don't go into it, it's like a box. It looks like a, I don't know, it's like 6 feet tall. And there's a little aperture on each side. So people are lined up on all sides and you wait in the little line. And then you get in and you put your face in the thing. And when you put your face in the thing, suddenly it's like there are thousands and thousands of you and three other people in this huge, endlessly vibrating space of different colored lights. It's kind of trippy, I will admit. But it's very intimate because you are actually about 2 feet away from the faces of people you've never met. And not only that, you're having an incredible experience. So it's like super intimate, but incredibly vast. Very wonderful. And this Yayoi Kusama never says that this has anything to do with it, but one of the most famous things coming out of this text is the Hwayan Buddhist tradition. And one of the most famous teachings of that is when Fatsang taught the Empress Wu, the only female sovereign in the history of China. She was like, I don't quite get how everything is interconnected. And he said, he made a room with mirrors on all sides. And he went in with her with a statue of the Buddha and a lamp. And they just stood there in this vast space of total intimacy and hugeness and interconnectedness. And then after they'd been there for a while, he pulled out a little ball of crystal. And he said, look in here. And everything in the whole room was in that. So that's the kind of thing this tower is about. So now let's read about the tower. I think, if people could read, let's say like read like a third of a page, that way we'll get a few more readers. Let's see, why don't we start? Could you start us off?
Sure.
Yeah. So this is the shorter of the packets. You can start at the beginning of a paragraph.
Okay. I'll just start at the beginning of a sentence. Okay.
It's a long sentence.
It's a long sentence, very, very long. Okay.
I think it's one sentence.
In one tower, he saw the underworld and saw Maitreya illumine the great hells with light and receive the hellish pains of the beings in hell. In another tower, he saw the ghost world and saw Maitreya giving much food and drink to the ghosts, relieving their hunger and thirst. In another tower, he saw Maitreya guiding the beings in the animal realm. In one tower, he saw Maitreya expounding the teaching to world guardians in an assembly of celestial kings. In another, he saw him in a group of chief gods of the 33-fold heavens. In another, he saw him in a group of chiefs of the heaven of timely portion. In another, he saw him in a group of lords of the heaven of contentment. In another, he saw him in a group of chiefs of the heaven of good emanations. In another, he saw him in a group of kings of the heaven of control. In another tower, he saw Maitreya as a great Brahma in a group of Brahma lords expounding the teaching.
It's a pass.
Yes.
In one tower, he saw Maitreya in a group of dragons and serpents. In another, in a group of goblins and fiends. In another, in a group of titans and demons. In another, in a group of giant serpents. In another, in a group of human chiefs. In another tower, he saw the enlightening being Maitreya in a group of gods, dragons, goblins, fiends, cherubs, titans, birds, minotaurs, serpents, humans, and non-humans, expounding the teaching to them. In one tower, he saw Maitreya in a group of hearers, and another in a group of individual illuminates. In another, in a group of enlightening beings. In another tower, he saw Maitreya expounding the teaching to beginning enlightened beings who had just set their minds on enlightenment. In another tower, he saw Maitreya extolling the excellences of the stages to those who had undertaken practice. In another, to those who had attained tolerance and were irreversible. In another, to those bound to be enlightened in one lifetime who had attained coronation. In another tower, to enlightening beings in the first stage.
In another tower, he saw Maitreya with enlightening beings in stages up to the 10th, extolling the excellence of all the stages. In another tower, he saw Maitreya speaking of the infinity of fulfillment of the transcendent ways. In another, of impartiality in approaching and entering into all studies. In another, of breadth of entry into concentration. In another, of depth of liberation. In another, of pervasion of the realm of higher knowledge of quiescent meditation, concentration, and trance. In another, of entry into the methods of guidance in enlightening practice. In another, of breath of performance of vows. In another tower, he saw Maitreya with a group of enlightening beings engaged in the same practice as he, speaking of the relevance of providing for the welfare and happiness of all beings, of the various arts and sciences to be employed for the benefit of the world.
In another tower, he saw Maitreya with a group of enlightening beings bound to be enlightened in one life, telling them about coronation with the knowledge of all Buddhas. In another tower, he saw Maitreya perambulating ceaselessly for hundreds of thousands of years. In another, he saw him engaged in recitation. In another, engaged in contemplation of doctrine. In another, engaged in exposition of doctrine. in another, engaged in writing down the teaching, in another, absorbed in concentration on universal love, in another, absorbed in all the meditations and immeasurables, in another, absorbed in the points of totality and the liberations. In another tower, he saw Maitreya absorbed in the practice of bringing forth the higher knowledge of enlightening beings.
And I'm going to ask the next person to skip to the next page in the middle of the chapter that starts in all those assemblies.
In all those assemblies, in all the manifestations of words, in the varieties of spans of life, by means of the knowledge based on clear recollection, standing on the ground of knowledge, sure to reach omniscient, satana,
sudana,
sudana, sorry, heard from all the objects in all those towers, the nets of bells and chimes, the drums and songs, and so on. And from the beings therein, the thunder of inconceivable multitudes of voices. From song, he heard of the variety of aspirations for enlightenment. From song, about the variety of offerings to Buddhas. From song, about the variety of eras of Buddhas. From song, about the infinite variety of teachings of Buddhas. Thus, he heard the voices of all the teachings as they had been expounded in the text. He also heard about setting out for omniscience. In such and such a land, the enlightened beings so and so aspire to enlightenment. Heard such and such a teaching, was inspired by the spiritual benefactor so and so. Went to such and such a congregation at the foot of the Buddha so and so, in such and such a land, in such and such an age. Planted such and such roots of God, of goodness. Heard about such and such qualities of Buddhahood. Understood such and such a variety of vows with such and such an intention. We realize supreme perfect enlightenment in so many eons after having carried out practice of for so many eons. Will be named so and so, will live so long in a Buddha land with such and such quality, with such and such higher commitment, such and such guidance of being. Such and such a congregation of disciples, individual illuminates and enlightened beings, the true teaching to last for so many ages after the death of the Buddha, with such and such benefit.
We heard another voice saying that in such and such a world, enlightening being so and so makes so many hundreds of difficult sacrifices. In the practice of transcendent giving, the enlightening being so and so keeps the precepts, cultivates tolerance, acquires vigor, attains meditations, engages in the investigation of wisdom. The enlightening being so and so in search of truth relinquishes kingship, family, hands and feet, eyes and head, and practices self mortification by fire. Enlightening being so and so advanced in the teaching of those who arrive at thusness, works as a spiritual teacher, preacher, giving the gift of religion, performs the service of religion, waves the banner of religion, beats the drum and blows the horn of religion, showers the rain of religion, preserves the teaching of the enlightened, adorns monuments to the enlightened, has images of Buddhas made, comforts beings and guards the treasury of truth. He heard another voice say that the Buddha so-and-so now is in such and such a world, currently existing and expounding the teaching with such and such an initiation, in such an assembly, in such a land, in such an age, with such a lifespan, in such a doctrine guiding people, in such a way, realizing such and such vows.
In this manner, from each object, Sudana heard articulations of an infinite variety of aspects of the teaching. And by listening to all those voices, he heard those facets of the teaching with a mind flooded with joy. From some, he got facets of mental command, from others, facets of commitment, tolerance, conduct, transcendence, higher perceptions, mystic knowledge, liberation, and concentration. He also saw measureless arrays of reflections in the mirrors, reflections of assemblies of Buddhas, circles of enlightening beings, congregations of disciples, groups of self-illuminates, defiled lands, pure lands, defiled and pure lands, reflection of all Buddhas in one world, worlds with Buddhas, small worlds, large worlds, subtle worlds, gross worlds, worlds in the cosmic net of Indra, inverted worlds, level worlds, worlds of hells, animals and ghosts, worlds full of celestials and humans.
He also saw measureless arrays of reflection on He also saw countless enlightening beings on the promenades or sitting on their seats, engaged in various activities. Some were walking around, some were doing spiritual exercises, some were practicing observation, some were projecting universal compassion, some were working on various sciences having to do with the welfare of the world. Some were instructing, some were reciting, some were writing, some were asking questions, some were engaged in ripening conduct, concentration, and knowledge, some were undertaking vows.
Okay, that's good. Some were undertaking vows. Thank you. So I'm just going to invite everyone to just pause for a minute and just turn your light inward. And that was like such a torrent of words and images. But see if there's anything that you just heard or read that stands out to you, like an image or a theme or a phrase. Or there's kind of a section that you're like, that was interesting. But just pausing, not looking at the text itself at the moment, but just looking at your memory or your feeling. And then, if you want, you can look at the piece of paper and see if you can find the thing, but you don't have to. But if you enjoy that, you're like, oh, what was that? That's cool. And you can go find it.
There's one part that mentioned feeding the hungry ghosts. Is that the same as the spirits mentioned in the Meal Sutra?
I can't remember. It says evil in your translation, so I don't know. I'm not sure. The spirits in that may be more like animus, Japanese spirits. Does someone else know for sure? I'm not sure. The tradition of feeding hungry ghosts runs throughout all Buddhist traditions, and there's some famous tradition around that called, I think, Sejiki. But anyway, I think it will be fun to just go around and ask each person in turn to share something.
I was kind of surprised at the use of such and such and so so much. It's pretty broad. Thought it was not in place.
I'm going to pass. I'm just taking it all in. Thank you, though.
So, music. So it's from all the objects and all those towers, the nets of bells and chimes and drums and songs and so on. Music.
Music.
It really jumped off the page. Those who had attained tolerance and were irreversible.
Hopeless. You know, like ripening conduct. That was really resonant for me. Mm. Right? Sure, what it says, but I'm going to think about it for a while.
That stood out to me too, the ripening conduct. Oh. I was like, what is that? But then I liked where it on page, well, it says, let's see, in another tower he saw Maitreya with a group of enlightening beings engaged in the same practice as he, which I thought was nice. It's speaking of the relevance of providing for the welfare and happiness of all beings of the various arts and sciences to be employed for the benefit of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's me as well. So.
I don't think there is enough particular scene that stood out to me, but I think this whole pack sections that we read kind of just shows that giving people what they need is the central idea. But I don't know, I've done nonprofits for years. I think we do things with good intention, but sometimes the act of it or the execution of it doesn't go as far as we want it to. So.
Well, I was kind of surprised by this. In another tower, he saw Maitreya perambulating ceaselessly for hundreds of thousands of years. Mm-hmm. So it's like this in this moment, he's also experiencing endless time. It's not just now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true.
I liked reading it aloud and hearing it better than I liked reading it. It was more significant to me and easier for me to grasp. And then just the, I don't have a specific thing, but just the gilding the lily, just the on and on and on. And you said something very, very, I thought resonated with me about giving people what they want and more.
It was interesting to me, this repetitiveness of in another tower, etc. So, because I played a lot of music in my childhood, so repetitiveness in music is one of the most kind of interesting things. So I just closed my eyes and repeating the same, like beginning of the sentence, sounded like some kind of music. Mm-hmm.
There were two images of Maitreya that really stood out to me. The first one, in another tower, he saw Maitreya perambulating ceaselessly for hundreds of thousands of years. And then later in the same paragraph, in another, absorbed in concentration on universal love.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to reread it to maybe come up with a pinnacle point, but I like the sort of juxtaposition. At one point, start naming off all the ghouls, goblins, ghosts, mm-hmm. and et cetera, et cetera. But then you have in the same passage a lot of, you know, visual of the tower upon tower upon tower, and the such and such and such and such and such and such and so and so. And it's much more, I can appreciate that juxtaposition between the specific like image of something like a ghost or a goblin. And then it doesn't matter so what it is. So such and such and so time. It's like the interconnectedness and endlessness of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's like we're like an inso here. Mm-hmm. Like a circle that's complete and has space in it. So really sweet to hear your voices, and looking forward to just hearing our shared silence for the rest of the day. So grateful for all your practice and that we're in such and such a place. Just a bunch of so-and-sos.
What we had Zazen at four?
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.